条寒饮，数员上将，怎奈敌众我寡，难以取胜，此乃天亡我族。哎，非战之罪。
Chinese is one of the oldest languages still in use today, even older than the ancient folk tales on which this traditional opera is based. Chinese also has more native speakers than any other language in the world, about 1 billion people. English, by comparison, has fewer native speakers than Chinese, but it has asserted itself as the world's most important international language. In such fields as business, science, and communications, the predominance of English as the lingua franca of the global village appears almost unassailable at this point in time.
Ladies and gentlemen,欢迎大家来到香港特区。
Both English and Chinese are official languages in Hong Kong, and something very interesting is happening in this tiny British colony which returns to Chinese sovereignty on July the 1st. A linguistic tug of war is taking place in Hong Kong, and the outcome could have astounding implications for business, computing, and even the legal system in all of China.
小心車門 ，please stand clear of the doors。下一站係尖沙咀 ，the next station is 尖沙咀。
In the Hong Kong subway, a recorded message graciously announces the stations in both English and Chinese.Hong Kong prides itself in being a bilingual city, and as high school principal Chang Yok Sing points out, this will help Hong Kong to retain its position as one of the world's great business centers.
English will continue to be a very important language in Hong Kong. I have talked to many investors coming from outside. People like to compare Hong Kong withother cities in China, like Shanghai, which is catching up very quickly. One advantage we believe we will still have over other Chinese cities is that it is easier to recruit English-speaking staff in Hong Kong than in other places in China.
But British rule in Hong Kong ends on July the 1st, and in anticipation of that event, there has already been a marked decline in English among ordinary people in recent years.
We have employers in Hong Kong complaining about the decline in the English standard of the school leavers in Hong Kong. And this is one of the major issues now being addressed by the education authorities here.The universities, they are trying to step up their English programs. The Education Commission, which designs the education policies in Hong Kong, took special steps to study the cause for this decline.
One of the reasons for the decline in English is the competition it's getting from a third language, for Hong Kong is fast becoming a trilingual city.
Join us for a look at Asia and the world from a Hong Kong perspective.Monday through Fridays from 4 until 7, here on Metro Plus, AM 1044.
Play with your radio dial in Hong Kong these days, and you're likely to hear not two, but three languages. In addition to English, you will, of course, hear Cantonese.
美丽新闻、音乐及资讯的电台 ,AM 1044彩信台。
This is the native tongue of most people in Hong Kong and of tens of millions of people in the southern Chinese provinces of Guangxi and Guangdong.
晚上好。今天据中国政府对香港恢复行使主权还有216天。
But a third language is gaining ground in these parts, and that is Mandarin, or Putonghua as it's called, modern standard Chinese, the official language of the People's Republic and the mother tongue of most people in northern China. Cantonese, which is spoken in Hong Kong, and Mandarin are often referred to as dialects of Chinese. But speakers of Cantonese and Mandarin cannot understand each other, and the two are so different that they're often considered to be separate Chinese languages, as distinct from each other as English and Dutch.
Mandarin is now a very common subject in most schools in Hong Kong. And the Hong Kong Education Department has plans for setting up a Mandarin examination at school leaving level. And of course, there are many Mandarin courses offered by various private institutions. Not, I think, for political reasons, but for economic reasons mainly. Because, you know, many trading firms which are doing business in China, naturally, they want to recruit staff members who can communicate with people in the mainland.
Of course, we're getting many more mainland visitors to Hong Kong now, either as business visitors and an increasing amount, of course, who are coming here on vacation. And so because of that, as a very significant presence in the town now, the taxi drivers, the hotel keepers, the shopkeepers in this town have to speak Mandarin. That is only going to increase in the years to come. Of course, there will be more Chinese officials working in Hong Kong. The Chinese government will have more outposts here. And with that, there will be an increasing need for it.
Nick Thompson is head of corporate affairs at Wharf Group, one of Hong Kong's oldest and largest firms. He also believes that Mandarin will be of increasing importance for business. After all, Hong Kong is the largest single investor in the People's Republic.
Most of that investment in the first 5 to 10 years was centered in the southern province of Guangdong, which speaks the same dialect of Chinese. They speak Cantonese there, the same as in Hong Kong. More and more Hong Kong investment is now going into northern and central China, and with that there is a need for Hong Kong's businessmen to pick up Mandarin.
While Mandarin will gradually gain ground in dealings with the People's Republic, Cantonese is taking over from English in other areas of Hong Kong life. Nick Thompson.
During my 8 years in Hong Kong, I've noticed that while English is still very much the language of business, and all business transactions here are still conducted that way, that at street level, more and more issues are led Cantonese first, English second. You see it, in, say, on television, on the news, if there is a press conference. The press conference will now start in Cantonese, and then afterwards someone will translate to English. 8 years ago, it was always the other way around. So it's been a gradual process here. It's not been anything by order of government. It's just been a natural transition.
Some people are quite concerned about what all this might lead to. David Newman is an American senior lecturer at Lingnan College in Hong Kong and the co-author of a rather bleak prognosis of Hong Kong's future under Chinese rule. In his book entitled Red Flag Over Hong Kong, Newman warns of the political and cultural implications of the decline of English in this region.
The decline of English in and of itself should not be a terrible consequence, but if this means that individuals in Hong Kong no longer can afford themselves the benefits of reading international newspapers, the Far Eastern Economic Review, the International Herald Tribune, Time Magazine, whatever the major publications here in Hong Kong are, the people of Hong Kong are more likely to become insular going forward. Language is also tied up with a whole host of other issues that political activists here in Hong Kong, supporters of the mainland, will try to introduce to make individuals more nationalistic, more patriotic. And my concern is that the educational structures here in Hong Kong are at risk.
The Hong Kong roadmap reads like a history of the British Empire. Queen's Pier, Victoria Park, Salisbury Road, Wellington Street, Edinburgh Place. How long will such quaint English place names be maintained?
I suspect soon after July 1, 1997, there is going to be an anti-colonial, anti-British, revisionist history movement going on that is going to be viewed as locally rising up from the residents of Hong Kong, demanding clearly manipulated from the mainland, but demanding changes in things like Queens Way, Queens Road Central, and these things will be renamed Deng Xiaoping Boulevard, Unification Plaza, whatever, and we will take on the revolutionary zeal and demonstrate our support for the unification.
Power. Intrigue. Seduction.
Certain television stations in Hong Kong are obliged to air a minimum number of hours in English every day. But with the end of British rule, that too is likely to change. Besides, Hong Kong has its own vibrant popular cinema in Cantonese and a massively successful local music scene known as Cantopop. Artists like Leon Lai, who want to expand their market, make cover versions of their songs in Mandarin and are even mixing the two. Recordings in Mandarin make Cantopop accessible to consumers in Taiwan who also speak Mandarin, and the growing consumer market in the People's Republic. English still has a strong presence in Hong Kong's educational system. It's an embarrassing legacy of colonial rule that Mandarin, in spite of its immense importance in the region, was not taught in secondary schools in Hong Kong until the late 1980s, and will not be universal until next year. But more and more students are already signing up for Mandarin courses. After all, it's the official language of the country that they will soon belong to. In Hong Kong, all formal gatherings with officials from the central government in Beijing are already being conducted in Mandarin. It's very unlikely, however, that Mandarin will ever completely replace the different dialects and languages of China, especially in the case of Cantonese, which is known for its very earthy and colorful local expressions.
I have no fear that the Cantonese dialect will be wiped out, or the Chinese dialect will be wiped out. In fact, the People's Republic of China in its early years have been attempting to impose spoken Mandarin throughout the whole of China, but dialects die hard.
Legislator Andrew Wong typifies the linguistic heritage of many people in Hong Kong. He's fluent in both Cantonese and English. But, like so many people in Hong Kong, he was born in a Mandarin-speaking environment in mainland China. During his graduate studies in the United States, he met students from Taiwan and discovered that he could also still speak Mandarin. In spite of the vast differences that exist between the various forms of spoken Chinese, like Mandarin and Cantonese, all dialects of Chinese have one and the same writing system. Written Chinese, the most ancient writing system still in use in a modern language, has tens of thousands of separate characters. It's not an alphabet based on sounds, but a completely separate set of visual symbols, independent of the spoken language and comparable with images like an arrow or a ladies' room sign, which means the same thing in any language. Hence, the same writing system is used in Japan, even though Japanese and Chinese bear no more resemblance to each other than English and Swahili. One Chinese character can have up to 40 strokes. This is why when you walk into an office in China, you probably won't hear the soft clicking sound of a computer keyboard or even this.
This is a problem that the Chinese computing community has had for a long time. that the English keyboard is not made for the Chinese language. Well, it's made for languages where there are set a relatively confined number of alphabets, whereas in the Chinese language, there are, depending how you count it, anywhere from 20 to 60,000 characters. So, you know, you can't fit all the characters into one keyboard.
Derek Ling is the Asia-Pacific Business Development Manager for Motorola's Lexicus division in San Francisco. Lexicus has developed what has been hailed as a breakthrough for the use of Chinese characters in computing. It's called the Wisdom Pen.
It comes with a tablet and a pen, so the user would just have to write the Chinese characters, which is the natural way for people to do this. And instead of typing Chinese characters on the keyboard, you write it the way you normally would write. And the software will translate that into a Chinese font.
Wisdom Pen is based on visual recognition technology and can recognize some 20,000 Chinese characters written from left to right, from right to left, or from top to bottom, and can identify even the sloppiest handwriting. The idea behind Wisdom Pen is to adapt the computer to the habits of the user and not the other way around. So if this system takes off, Chinese computer users can comfortably continue to write by hand as they always have been accustomed to do.
There would actually be a paradigm shift in Greater China, whereas now the computers are shipped with a keyboard and a mouse. We envision that this is going to change, that perhaps at the beginning they would get rid of the mouse and have a tablet instead. You can use it as a mouse, you can write with it, you can draw with it, and perhaps eventually getting rid of the keyboard altogether. And we are also working on speech recognition technology, where we believe that ultimately a combination of speech and handwriting will be the key paradigm for Greater China computing.
There is one very cumbersome way of writing Chinese with a computer, and that is by transcribing it into an alphabet known as pinyin. Introduced in 1958, pinyin transliterates the sounds and tones of Chinese into letters of the Roman alphabet, the writing system used by the English language. We use pinyin whenever we write Chinese names like Beijing or Mao Zedong. But in a place like Hong Kong, where English is one of the official languages, there's a strong temptation to just slip into English at the keyboard, rather than go to all the trouble of transforming Chinese into the Roman alphabet. And this is one reason why Motorola has targeted Hong Kong for marketing Wisdom Pen.
Hong Kong is actually a very interesting situation, because Hong Kong people have been able to get away with not typing Chinese because the official language is English. And when they use computer, they use English. Even secretaries at companies don't know how to use Chinese, input Chinese on the keyboard. But now with 1997 coming up, Hong Kong will be returning to China on July 1st, 1997. The need for Chinese becomes dramatically greater. The Chinese are pushing for dual language and to have both Chinese and English as official language, even in the court. So there's a real urgency to finding a much more natural solution, and we think this is it, and this is the right timing for it.
Technological developments like Wisdom Pen will reduce the forced dependence of Chinese computer users on written English and on the Roman alphabet. At the same time that these astounding shifts are taking place in the computing world, English is also having to make room for Chinese in other major areas in Hong Kong, namely in legislative government and in the judiciary.
回答議員之質詢，各位議員在提出質詢並獲答覆後。
Andrew Wong is president or speaker of Hong Kong's parliament, the Legislative Council. Wong recently translated the assembly's standing orders from English into Chinese, and thanks to this translation, legislators can now conduct their business in both of Hong Kong's official languages.
The standing orders were not written in Chinese. So during my first year as president, I conducted the sittings in English, but members were free to use Chinese, use Cantonese. Then at the end of my first year, i.e. in July 1996, I had completed my task of translating they're selling orders in the Chinese in a very proper manner, and they were adopted by the council through a resolution. And as from this October onwards, this session, I've been conducting the sittings in Cantonese. Mm-hmm. And so far, the results are good. Mm-hmm. I can't say impeccable, but I am sure that we can conduct our business in Chinese as effectively as in English.
Mr. President, I'd like, as you indicated, to begin this afternoon by making a statement.
When Governor Chris Patton addresses the chamber in English, his statements are simultaneously interpreted into Cantonese, which is relayed over earphones to the other members of parliament. Likewise, any legislator can put a question to the governor in Cantonese. And an instantaneous translation in English is provided for the benefit of the non-Chinese speakers.
Governor, that we didn't have too much discussion before. We had an appropriate level of discussion.
This is all pretty straightforward translating in comparison to the linguistic headaches currently inflicted upon the judiciary in Hong Kong. Here, too, English no longer rules supreme. Efforts are underway, for example, to localize the judiciary, that is, bring in more Chinese-speaking magistrates. But legal experts warn that this should not be done too hastily. Gladys Lee is one of Hong Kong's most prominent barristers.
I think the issue of use of Chinese is one of the problems that may make it difficult to recruit suitably qualified candidates. If one is going to confine the search to lawyers or judges who are perfectly comfortable using, in a court context, either English or Chinese, then I think you are actually reducing substantially the pool of qualified people.
Court proceedings are increasingly being conducted in Cantonese, the native language of the overwhelming majority of Hong Kong's people, and a major effort is underway to translate the law into written Chinese. It's a process that could have far-reaching implications for the legal system in all of China. One of the people at the heart of these developments is Barrister Margaret Ng, who represents the legal profession in the Legislative Council.
Practitioners are not altogether happy about the lack of use of Chinese in the lower courts, because where there is very little law, when a lot of it is evidence, when basically people come before the court are mostly Chinese speaking, there is a lot of sense to use the language which are most readily understood by most people.
So why was it never done before? Well, the main reason appears to be the very nature of Hong Kong's legal system, which it will be allowed to retain when it becomes part of China on July the 1st. In Hong Kong, the administration of justice is based on English common law, which in turn is based largely on concepts and precedents that simply do not yet exist in the Chinese language.
The Chinese concept of law and the common law concept of law are very different animals. Certain things we have taken for granted in the common law system, such things as fiduciary duty, presumption of innocence, natural justice, these are not used in the Chinese system. So that it's not easy for you to just explain the same thing in the Chinese language. Unless we are prepared to throw away all these concepts, I think we will have a real difficulty in using Chinese in court immediately.
And in reality, even if parts of a trial or a hearing can be conducted in Chinese, much of the hearings will still need to be conducted in English, because all our authorities, all our precedents are in the English language.
Common law means that the judges have to interpret and put meaning to the meanings of words. And you get real problems when there are two forms of those statutes, and perhaps the judge's native language is in English and he can't read the Cantonese statute, or the judge's native language is Cantonese and he can't read the English statute.
It is actually very, very time-consuming as a process to try and identify the closest possible Chinese translation for an English concept. I mean, the whole idea of equity and the notion of unconscionable conduct is something which is very difficult to translate into Chinese, and yet that is, if you like, the basis of much of the equitable jurisdiction of the courts, whether it's unconscionable for one party to do something to the other. And I don't think so far that the concept of unconscionable conduct has been properly translated.
Chinese and English now have equal status in Hong Kong courts, even if the law central to a case, the precedent, was originally written in English. In the process of translation, this can create some very interesting legal loopholes, as David Newman points out.
Just several weeks ago, there was a court case here involving an elderly woman who owned a fish sale store, a fishmonger. And she had taken a little wooden table and put it out on the street corner, and she was cutting fish on this table. And she was arrested by one of the local authorities under the English statute that says one shall not extend the physical premises of your operation out beyond the physical constraints of your licensed location. She had put a table outside, and she was convicted under the English statute. She appealed under the Chinese statute, which said that you will not build additions onto your premises. And she had not built any addition. She had simply placed a table outside. And she was acquitted under the Chinese statute.
Whatever Hong Kong's legal headaches might be today, the gradual translation of English common law into written Chinese may ultimately prove to be one of the most profound developments taking place in Asia today. China, a country of well over 1 billion people, is undergoing a major judicial transition as it tries to evolve towards the rule of law. And China's success in establishing the rule of law will to a large extent determine the viability of its new political and economic structures. China cannot fall back on its own past legal traditions, which have been notoriously arbitrary, corrupt, and unsuited to modern conditions. So it must look elsewhere for usable models. Margaret Ng believes that Hong Kong may provide the key.
Now, of course, China has to decide on what is most suitable for the situation in China. But if in Hong Kong, when dealing with the whole process of evolution into a bilingual system, we are able to give a very good rendition in Chinese of the fundamental principles of the common law and the procedure which implement these very fundamental principles, then I think we would have provided for China a very good body of reference material. And if China wants to adopt any of it, it would be much easier for it to do so. And I think that if Hong Kong is able to do that, we would have made a very good contribution. I don't think in any part of the world, any jurisdiction had managed to do this, because China is a very large jurisdiction and nobody has been able to translate anything into Chinese that China can use.
If the People's Republic becomes the major political and economic force that many observers predict it will be in the next century, then the Chinese language could acquire immense international importance. In fact, as far back as the 17th century, the German philosopher Leibniz was intrigued by the universal potential of the Chinese writing system, a set of symbols independent of spoken language. Leibniz concluded then that the whole world should learn to write Chinese. All of us already know a few words of spoken Chinese: chow, wok, ping pong, kowtow, gung ho. But in the future, we're likely to learn a few more.